everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of Panditri on a Pint. Today we are only two blokes having an above average football conversation. Joining me on the podcast today is Akshat. And
whoa, football conversation. You want to restart, huh?
No, we'll go ahead. Today is not a football conversation, it's a cricket conversation. Our second ever cricket episode. A lot of people have said that we should do an episode on cricket, and now, of course, the World Cup is going on. So the first episode that we did, actually, I want all our listeners to disregard that, because for some reason, I was trying to explain cricket, thinking that people don't know what cricket is. Vaishnav was asking me most of the questions, and I think I did a really bad job of explaining the game. So there was not much like meat in the podcast. So we're just going to go ahead with this episode, assuming that if you've reached so far, you know what cricket is, what the sport is, and yeah. There is a thing called the World Cup going on at this point, and we're going to jump right into it. For those who don't know what cricket is, please go watch a YouTube video. I think they do like a better job of explaining it than I can ever do.
Cricket is one of those sports which, like, I know we have a lot of people listening in from the US who may not be that aware of the game, but honestly, explaining it on a podcast is not going to work out. You can watch 2-3 games, and I'm pretty sure you still won't understand what's going on. So yeah, this one may not be for you, but for the rest of you guys, yes, we're going to break down the World Cup.
Imagine explaining someone like all the different ways a player can get out, but that particular ball turns out to be a free hit, and then you have to explain that to them.
Yeah,
that's it, bro. They lose hope. It's done. Yeah. But Akshat and I, this is our second duo episode. The first one was for the World Cup as well, where it was the Football World Cup. And in that episode, we got a lot of things right, which ended up happening towards the end of the tournament. So let's hope that this episode is as fruitful as the one that we did back then. But yeah, of course, the World Cup is well and truly underway. We are recording this on the 12th of October. And the match that has just gotten over is the Australia-South Africa game. So almost every team, I think, has played two matches now. Yeah, every team has played two matches,
right? Every team,
Yeah, so that's when we're recording. And we're just going to go into a team-by-team analysis. Not dwell too much on the games that have happened, but try and focus on the bigger picture and see where there are gaps and holes in the team and where they are really strong in certain areas and the teams to look out for. So Akshat, do you want to start off with any particular team?
Let's start with Australia, dude. The match just got over. I have some thoughts on that team. I'm really glad that we're recording this after two games, because if before the tournament you asked me to make this preview episode,
yeah, I would say Australia. Yeah, they're my favorites, is what I would say.
And I think with Australia, just before the World Cup, they played two series, one in India, which was 3 ODIs, and one in South Africa, which was 5 ODIs in South Africa, right? And they won the first two ODIs of that series. And at that point, everybody would say that, okay, Australia are favorites.
Yeah.
What happened after that? They lost 3 straight games to South Africa. Then they lost 2 games against India. The last game was like a dead rubber where both teams weren't really that interested, to be honest. So they won that game. And then they lost their opening two matches of the World Cup. So they are in trouble. They have lost a lot of games recently. And that team, it has so many problems. I just don't even know where to begin. Like, the way they're playing right now.
Akshat, do you think, since you already brought up this point, do you think that because the South Africa, they won the first two games and lost the next three, do you think that sort of had a psychological impact on this team in general, where they just seem to be completely out of confidence coming into this World Cup?
I think definitely with the batting order, there is a severe lack of confidence. Because, I mean, cricket is especially batting in cricket, is one of those games where batsmen need to be in the flow of runs, right? And unfortunately, what's happened with Australia is that they're in this habit of batting collapses, right? Like, they lose like a bunch of wickets, and in their middle order is just not able to sustain any kind of partnership, right? People will get out for 20, 10, 30, not more than that. And they're not going to be able to post those big totals, which you need, especially when you're playing a World Cup in India, you need that, right? So I do definitely think there is a little bit of that confidence. Secondly, it's about a lot of chopping and changing happening in the team. In that South African series, there were players who were unavailable due to injury and then they came back. So then there was a movement in the team.
Yeah, it was almost a completely different team. In fact, the entire South Africa series is not the same team that had played that India series and is now at the World Cup. So there are a lot of changes. I mean, they were injury struck, but it's also players like Mitch Stark, you know, who show up only for the World Cup. They don't want to play these bilateral series. That's also another aspect. Like, okay, for how long do you need to stay with the team, or are you that good that it's okay that we just call you for these big tournaments? That's one aspect of it. And then the other aspect is team gelling, right? Team chemistry. There's a lot of change that happens when you see a team that's fielding. And they're fielding with intensity, with some aggressiveness.
Yeah.
It shows after a certain point of when that same group of players have played together, you can see that camaraderie of even simple things like backing up, you know, of an overthrow or catching. That intensity of the field comes when you are playing with a group of people who you've played with a lot before, which seems to not be the case for this Australian team. And uncharacteristically, they're just dropping catches. I mean, that's not something you associate with Australia at all. In fact, it's the last team you would think that would be poor in the field. Like, okay, batting, bowling might be... You might be bad on your bad day. Like, everyone have bad days, but you would expect them to field well.
Yeah, I think the word you associate with Australian teams of the past, especially World Cup teams, is intensity, right? Which is what you said.
Yeah.
And especially in the field, they've always been extremely aggressive. And they had us, India, at 2 for 3. And then at around 20 odd...
19 for 4,
Yeah, they dropped that sitter for Kohli, which probably would have sealed the game for them. And in this match against South Africa, they've dropped like 5 or 6.
6 catches, yeah. That sitter as well, when Kohli put it in the air... There was a miscommunication between, I think, Mitch Marsh ended up dropping the catch and the keeper, Alex Carey, on who's actually going to go for it. And, you know, these are the kind of nitty-gritties that get sorted out when you're playing together as a group for a long period of time. You would know, I think that was a keeper's catch. In hindsight, Alex Carey was the person who should have gone for it, but he didn't. And it ended up being Mitch Marsh, and they dropped, and they dropped the match. Because 19 for 4, I don't think you would have come back from that situation.
Yeah. And I mean, to add to the list of problems, right? I think this is something which I'm going to talk about throughout this episode. But I'm just going to bring it up over here. Is that you cannot win a World Cup or a series for that matter in India if your spinners are not picking up wickets. And Adam Zampa, I mean, he's been in great form over the last 2 years. I'd say he's been in the wickets. But he has looked really off it. And not just in like the 2 games, the World Cup, but even, you know, before that. He has really looked off it. And that is a huge area of concern. Because in India, like, you know, the conditions are not very suited for fast bowlers. There's a little bit of swing, but it's not going to be seam. There's not extra bounce. So it's difficult to take a lot of wickets in the power play. So you need your spinners to come in and really take control of the game and take wickets in the middle overs. And for me, the form of Adam Zampa is something which really needs to be addressed, because Australia have no one else. It's just him. They've put all their eggs in the Zampa basket.
It's a very strange decision that they did that, because they ended up taking only 14 players. See, you can't go into every tournament expecting to have your best 15. There are always going to be injuries. You'll be very lucky if you play the course of 11 games with your best team. And that has been a problem for Australia, which they just haven't seemed to sort out, because Ashton Agar is injured. And he was their spinning all-rounder that fits into that side and adds that fifth bowling option plus the second spin option. And since he was injured... They wanted Travis Head to be that guy, who's also their opening batsman. But Travis Head is injured too. So now they have two very key positions that they were not able to fill up, which is who's going to open with David Warner and who's going to be our fifth spinner. So they're like, okay, we're just going to go with Zampa and Maxwell. And Maxwell arguably has been the better bowler so far. He's come in and contained in the middle overs and picked up wickets. And as you said, Zampa has looked completely off it, I think, ever since that South Africa game where he got absolutely battered for like 113 runs. Which,
wow. 113?
Yeah, hit 10 overs. Yeah. I mean, it does, no matter how irrelevant that game might have been in the context of things, it has to do something to you psychologically, right? And he hasn't been the same bowler since. He just doesn't seem to have that risk-taking ability that a leg spinner should have to toss the ball up and flight it, which is so important in Indian conditions.
Yeah. Leg spinners especially, I mean, you need to be willing to get thrashed to take up 2 wickets or 3 wickets. That's just the mentality you need to have. I mean, I don't want it to be, because they are still, I mean, if it clicks for Australia, they have so many like good points too. I just want to highlight that as well, right? Because yes, Mitch Marsh isn't really good right now, but David Warner is excellent in Indian conditions. Steve Smith, excellent in Indian conditions. Labuschagne is in great form. Again, like these, it's a small blip over here, but he has generally been in great form. They have dangerous all-rounders. Their batting is really deep. They have a lot of options over there as well, with Marcus Stoinis coming back. They have, you know, Pat Cummins who can bat a bit. Glenn Maxwell, of course. So that team, I mean, if they're able to find that aggression, if they're able to find that confidence to turn things around, there was a reason why they were so, you know, highly regarded as a favorite for this tournament. But, you know, the thing is, they're already in this position where they've lost 2 games. And out of the 9 games, I would say you need to win 6.
7.
Maybe. Yeah, I think it's unlikely that 5 teams will win 6 games. So I think 6 should be enough. But yeah, there is maybe a case that you need 7 or 6 with a good run rate. And Australia, that basically puts Australia in a position where they need to win, let's say, 6 out of the next 7 games. And they haven't even faced New Zealand. They haven't even faced England yet, right? So that's a very precarious situation for them. So
I love tournament dynamics in this way because like every team are allowed to lose 2 matches. But it's about when you're losing those 2 matches that counts. Yeah. Now, Australia found themselves in a position where they're going into every game already in a pressure situation, knowing that they cannot afford to lose. Whereas, would you rather have it that you win 4, lose 1 and win 4 again, because then you're playing a little bit more freely? You know? So,
I mean, absolutely. I mean, they have, no doubt, they've had the 2 toughest opening fixtures, and it's unlucky. But, I mean, the mentality which I guess Australia needs to have is that, listen, we have to play each and every single team once anyway, right? So they have to take it game by game. Afghanistan, Netherlands, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, these are 4 games which they should win, right? Like, respectfully, those are 4 games which they should win. So it's going to come down to those key games against England and New Zealand, right? Like, what's going to happen in those games?
Yeah.
So they have to take it game by game. You know, they have to just calm down. The thing is, they have the talent, right? And more importantly, they have the people who have performed in India in the IPL year after year after year after year. So they can turn it around. It's
and if it's one team that you would expect them to do it, it would be Australia, because you always associate that Australian team with the never back down attitude. They're a side consistently over the last maybe like 30 years, or at least since I've been seeing cricket, they're a side where if they're in trouble, someone or the other puts their hands up. Someone very unlikely puts their hands up, and as a team, they will come through. We saw some, I think, miraculous escapes. One thing that comes to my mind is Mike Hussey's like 26 run in the last over to win the game against Pakistan in a semi-final in a World Cup, which is like mad pressure situation. But then,
ridiculous.
You know, they just produce these kind of moments and talents because they have that never back down attitude. We've not seen it in this World Cup yet. We saw a glimpse of it when like their fast bowlers were running in and India were 2 for 3. But it was just the class of the 2 batsmen out there in the middle who doused down the situation.
Like, let's be honest, bro. We 2 of those 3 wickets we gave them, which we'll come to when we talk about India.
Yeah. But still, I mean, you got to pick those wickets up. Interesting thing is that the Australia-New Zealand game is going to be played at Dharamshala. And both the teams have excellent upfront bowlers who can swing the ball both ways. So it's going to be one of those few contests that's going to be a battle of the bowlers, like which, especially your new ball bowlers, like which of your new ball bowlers are more in song and who can, which batsman can ride out the new ball spell better. So that's going to be a great game to watch.
Because in Dharamsala, like the margin for error is so low, right? Because if you miss your length a little bit also, it's like a fucking 55 meter boundary, bro. Like,
One edge
will go for six also. So, yeah, it's...
But it's also the ground in India which is going to give the most aid to a fast bowler that you're going to get.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, let's see, dude. It's going to be a fascinating contest, that one for sure. One to look out for.
A key player for this Australian team. We'll do this for like every team. Just a key player that you think is going to have a massive tournament for them.
That's a good one. I would say Steve Smith, bro. I just feel like... he is their star player, he's their talisman, and I think he needs to step up, and he just has this knack of performing well in India, at least against India, bro. We can fucking hardly get him out. So, I think he needs to, step up, and he will.
Okay, for me, I think it's Glenn Maxwell who needs to have a very, very big tournament, especially since they are lacking a spinner. So, both in bowling and in batting, he needs to be up there for them to go far in this tournament. Okay, let's move ahead. Next team, Akshat, that you want to address?
Let's talk about today's game. The other team from today's game, bro, South Africa.
Okay.
God
damn.
The
other team for today's game, I mean, I've been saying it from the start that I think they are a very, very strong, commendable force, which now a lot of people are seeing after these two games. And for me, I would still say that it's arguably the best batting lineup in this entire tournament with the kind of form that they're in.
Yeah, I think like if you talk about the most in-form batting lineup in this tournament, it's undoubtedly South Africa, like not even close. Their top six is, I mean, okay, Bavuma is a little bit here and there with his form right now, but I think he has a very important role to play as the guy who will give support to all these people, right? Because around him is Quinton de Kock, who scores at an astonishing rate, Klaassen... Their number 4 to number 6, number 4, 5, 6
is very dangerous.
If you give them a platform, right? Like if you are 35 overs into the game and you've lost just like 2 or 3 wickets, South Africa can fucking destroy you. All of those guys have found form at the right time. Very scary. Very, very, very scary batting lineup for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, someone like Aidan Markram, who's hit only 3 ODI centuries, but all 3 have come in 2023. So he's the kind of, he's a dangerous player anyways, who just seems to be finding the flow of playing ODI cricket. And that's scary because he's a scary batsman. And then you have someone like Hendrik Klaassen, who's just belted like 175 odd, not even a month ago. He averages... I think 41 with a strike rate of over 120. And when you're batting that low down the order, it's crazy numbers. David Miller, since 2019, is averaging more than 50 at a strike rate of more than 140. So this is a team that has like explosive players. And the thing is that just one of them need to click to completely take the game away from you. That's the scary part.
Yeah.
It's like the Australian team have like one Glenn Maxwell who's an X factor. India, you could arguably say someone like Surya Kumar Yadav. Like those kind of players, if they bat for 40, 50 balls and they look in flow, they can completely take the game away from you. Like Nicholas Puran, for example. And the South African team, I think the entire middle order is like that. So you either need to get like, you. I don't think you can keep them quiet. They're a team that you need to pick regularly pick up wickets to try and beat. Yeah. And that's always the sign of a good team, you know?
It is. I mean, like I said, I mean, it's about the form which they found themselves in. I think that tournament against Australia really gave them a kick, right? And that's what the results are being shown here in the World Cup.
And another thing is that Hendrik Klaassen and Rassie van der Dusen and David Miller to an extent are all very good players of spin. So it actually suits them in these conditions very well. And it's a team that has very few weaknesses. I think we'll get into the weaknesses in a bit.
I will just transition to the weaknesses. But before that, I want to talk about their bowling, right? Because they have two bowlers, fast bowlers in that team who would rival the best bowling attack I've seen, right? Which is, for me, the best fast bowling duo in cricket right now is Bumrah and Siraj, right? And I actually think that the South African duo of Ngidi and Rabada rivals that. And I am giving this as big a compliment as I possibly can, right? Because they are insane. That actually transitions into the weakness of the South African team, where they have only 5 bowling options. I know that Markram can bowl a little bit, but he's very much on the part-timer of, rather than an all-rounder. Yeah. I don't think he's very reliable as a bowler.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, Marco Jansen is a bowler who is very aggressive, where he tries to take wickets, he tries to swing the ball, but he isn't very accurate. He gives away a lot of runs. Even, you know, that game against Sri Lanka, which they thrashed Sri Lanka, but people will forget that Sri Lanka also scored more than 300 that game, right? And for me, when you play against the bigger teams, of course they played Australia, but let's say the bigger in-form team against a New Zealand, against India, against England, holy shit, like, you know, these kind of teams, they will target one of your players. Like Marco Jansen, they'll be like, I'm not scoring any runs against Ngidi, I'm not scoring any runs against Rabada, let me target Jansen. Or let me target Keshav Maharaj or Shamsi, if they're playing 2 spinners that day. And I think their lack of a sixth bowler, a genuine sixth bowler, is something which is really going to hurt them going forward into the tournament, especially when you get to that semi-final stage and the final stage, if they get that far, right? I feel like that is the only weakness in the team, but I also feel like it's a very significant weakness as well.
No, it is. It is for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the batting probably you can say is not as deep as they want it, but I'm okay with that. If your top order and middle order is doing the job, I'm not one of those who needs the number 8 to bat. But yeah, I think this is a huge, huge, huge weakness, because one of the days where, you know, Keshav Maharaj is getting taken apart, then suddenly you're like, fuck, where do we go? You know, what can we do?
Yeah.
You end up bowling too many overs of Rabada early. You end up bowling too many overs of Ngidi early. And that can just lead to carnage, you know, in the death overs as well. So yeah, I think the composition of the team is kind of where the weakness is for South Africa. But it's very high octane cricket, you know. It's like they'll concede a lot of runs, but they'll score a lot of runs also. So the games will be very exciting.
No, I completely agree with you, and that's what I was going to bring up as well. I think Andrik Nokia's injury has really left a dent in that South African middle spell overs, because he was an aggressive wicket taker in the middle. And they've lost that now, and they've had to sort of overcompensate by not giving Rabada the new ball, but bringing him in as a first change, which is again taking away the potency from Rabada bowling with the new ball. And you're right, this is a very clear team of 6 batsmen, 5 bowlers. You know, like, my 6 will do the 6 and my 5 will do the 5. For those who watch the IPL, I think the closest I can get to is Rajasthan Royals, because they follow a similar template where there are 6 batsmen and 5 bowlers, and like each have their own jobs. But I think in a T20 you can still get away with it. In a 50 over format, as Akshat said, if one bowler is having a bad game and you're targeted for the next 5 or 6 overs, then you are in trouble, because quality teams are not going to let it go. Quality teams are looking for the tiniest of advantages. That's what cricket is about. You want to play out the time when the opposition is on top, and you want to really take advantage when you are on top. And I think this would be a significant advantage, because, I mean, not having a bowler to bowl 4 or 5 overs can completely change the dynamic of the game. And I'm sure teams like England especially would be looking at something like that.
England is the team I'm thinking of, because they are famous for this, right? Like, if a bowler is having a bad day against that English lineup, they're ruthless. Like, their number 2, number 3, number 4, number 5, number 6, number 7 will all come and hit that one player only. Like, they are, you know, they are like that. Like, that is how they play.
England go a step ahead, Akshat. I don't think they wait for a bowler to have a bad day. I think they go in with the intention of targeting a bowler. They put the pressure on so that now Shamsi comes in for his first over. He's stonked for like 20 runs. What are you going to do? Who are you going to give 9 overs to in that South African lineup? So it's a big concern. But we'll quickly move ahead and speak about your player to watch out for.
For South Africa, I am going to say Rabada, bro. I just love Rabada. I don't know. I just love watching him.
You love a fast bowler.
I do. Okay. I do. A South African fast bowler, dude, with that legacy of tail stain. And yeah, so.
I think for me, it's going to be Hendrik Larsen. If he has a stellar tournament, we could see him light up this World Cup. But just closing point on South Africa, they always come in with a fucking crazy team and they always choke. They're known to choke. This team is known to be the Spurs of cricket. No, I'm just putting it out there for the fans. Like, don't think we are on this hype train because we've been here before and they've always choked. So,
yeah.
Okay, then let's move ahead to the next team, which is England, who went on this sort of soul-searching journey to find themselves after the 2015 World Cup, where they lost to Bangladesh, finished, I don't even remember, they didn't qualify for the quarterfinals also in that. So they had a pretty abysmal tournament, and they decided that we're going to go back to the drawing board and change the entire face of ODI cricket, like, for every person involved. And they've come up with this absolutely aggressive approach to the game where you're just like, okay, I have 300 balls. I'm going to use this as an opportunity to hit at least 100 sixes or 100 boundaries. Like, that's the intent at least in which they go in. They don't want to muck about too much. They don't believe in taking the quick 1-2s rotating strike. I think for them it's more about getting a boundary every over, or getting a six every over and then seeing where they can take it from there. So it's a team which has a lot of which has a lot of attitude, which has a lot of aggression, which has some class players as well. I think Joe Root is like a phenomenally good and underrated ODI player, long format player, and I think he's the only one who sort of understands the ebbs and flows of the game, which I don't think a lot of English players do. But they have some serious talent in that team, man. And if they click on their day, I think this would be one of those teams that can break the highest ever individual ODI score, and I think it's going to happen this World Cup.
Though that's a brave prediction, Amar.
Yeah. I think they would be, because they're playing against Sri Lanka and Bangalore, and Sri Lanka are a really bad bowling side and Bangalore is a very small ground, and I think that would be a very high scoring game if England bat first.
Yeah, Bangalore is the place to break such records, especially if you have a bad bowling lineup like RCB. But everything you said I agree with. I think what you touched on Joe Root's role in this team, he's just a phenomenal player. I mean, the way that he has been able to adapt his game to suit this team and the style of play which England have adopted is very underrated. Like, people need to give him a lot more credit for that, right? Like, genuinely, can you imagine Dravid playing baseball? Because that is kind of like what Joe Root has done, right? Yeah.
Literally like that, yeah. And he's mastered that reverse sweep ramp, man. He's so good at it. It's it's not something that he's just trying and like it's coming off once or twice. Every time he attempts it, he connects.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like you said, I mean, just going through that batting lineup, kind of like the South African one, where everyone can hit you. You know, everyone can absolutely fucking punish you if they're in the mood to do so.
But I think Akshat in this batting lineup, it's a lot deeper, because I think Adil Rashid is the only one who can't bat.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe Mark Wood also is not that good. And that tall guy, bro, what's his name?
Reece Topley.
Huge motherfucker. But that's like 9, 10, 11, right? But till 8, they can all genuinely bat and they can all genuinely slog you. So it's a little bit, it's dangerous. My question to the England batting team, and I'm not saying this is a weakness, I just want to see them persevere in conditions which are not good for them. When they're put in tough situations where they can't hit their way out, because there are conditions where you cannot hit your way out, right? Are they going to persist with the way they play? Which answer is yes, they will, because we've seen that in the Ashes, we've seen that in Test cricket. So of course in ODIs they're going to do the exact same, right? But you need to be mix this aggression with a little bit of smartness as well. And that is where I see the challenge for this English team coming. Where when they need to show that maturity and they need to show temperament, like you said, you know, in ODI cricket is a lot about ebbs and flows, right? So when there's an ebb, don't lose three wickets. Lose one wicket, score at 4 runs per over, and then continue at your 10 runs per over for the next 20 overs, right? So identifying those moments in these games is so key. And only the great batsmen like, say, a Kohli or a Steve Smith can do that well. And this English team is not interested in doing that. It's, again, it's I'm not saying it's a weakness. It's a totally different approach to cricket which they have taken. And I am not fully convinced by it. I am not as taken to with baseball as the rest of the world is. But I'm just an old guy screaming at the skies.
In this case, what helps is that they are, if you see their middle order, right, it's actually a very experienced middle order. So you have Joe Root, Ross Butler, and Ben Stokes coming in if and when he comes in. I'm sure it's going to be imminent. That is going to change a lot of their, the way they approach their middle order batting. And then who's there? And then they have Liam Livingstone, who's anyways there as a finisher and a tonk hitter. But these three plus Besto add a lot of experience to that batting lineup, where at least one of them will have to show some maturity. And I totally expect Joe Root or someone like Ben Stokes to step up.
Yeah, I think Joe Root for sure will. But I don't know, because I look at the template of that. I know we shouldn't judge an entire team and their performance based on one game. But the opening game of the World Cup when they played against New Zealand, right? That is what exactly what I'm talking about, where you can see New Zealand are controlling the game because they keep taking wickets again and again and again and again. And that is where I think England need to be a little bit more smart, right? Like, not chase the 350 or 360 score. Take a little bit easy and make a 330, which is going to give your bowlers a chance. So it's about game management for England, right? That is my question to them. I don't see it as a weakness. I'm just saying that is where they will be tested. But coming to weaknesses of England, I think Jofra Archer is a huge miss for this team. I do like my tall giant of a bowler, because he adds that, you know, extra threat with his bouncers and his pace, which not a lot of batsmen can deal with. So like, that's a good X factor to have. But they're really missing Jofra Archer. Their bowling lineup is not dangerous per se. Mark,
it's looking very weak. Very weak and toothless, especially in the front line. I mean, they have Sam Curran who can swing the ball. They have Chris Wokes who can swing the ball. But I think in genuine raw pace, they're really missing Archer. But another thing, Akshat, is that Archer has been out of action for a while. So
yeah,
for a team like England, I'm actually surprised that they still, even after the World Cup has started, a lot of the pundits are still waiting for Archer to come back. Like, it doesn't work that way. You have to account for your injuries. Unexpected injuries are going to happen. But this was not an unexpected injury. This guy has been out genuinely for a very long time. He's even missed the Ashes. So you've had a phase of at least a year, year and a half, where you could have found a replacement and played them and gotten them accustomed to this team in this format. But you, I think, rely too much on a bowler who I think is a little bit overrated. He had a great, great Ashes series in, I think, 2016. But after the first injury, he's just lost steam. And now you're waiting for him to come back to change your bowling attack completely for a World Cup. I think there's a bit of a... I think they missed a beat over here on what cricket is about and how you should go about doing things.
No, that's fair. I think, so that point I made about the spinners, right, when I first started talking about Australia, I want to like fully address that, okay? Because I think it's important, because in 2011, the last World Cup which was played in India, player of the tournament was Yuvraj Singh. And our bowling lineup at that time had Yuvraj Singh and had Harbhajan Singh. And if you needed Ashwin, another option, you can play Ashwin. And if you want an X-factor option, you have Piyush Chawla. Okay? I'm just like throwing that. The other World Cup, the previous World Cup, which was held in India, was in 96. It was held in India and Sri Lanka and Pakistan also. I don't remember. But in that World Cup, it was won by Sri Lanka. Who was the player of the tournament? Sanath Jayasurya. look at their bowling lineup. They had Sanath Jayasurya, they had Muthaiah Muralidharan, they had Arvinda da Silva who could bowl, they had Kumar Dharmasena who's a fantastic umpire now, but they had all these spin options with them, right? I think in India, like I said, if you want to win a World Cup in India, you need good spinners, you need wicket-taking spinners, and having batsmen who can spin the ball well is just a cheat code, right? It's so important because they allow you to control middle overs, which fast bowlers just can't do in India. It's just not an option for them, right? When I look at this England team, I don't see the options. I just don't. Adil Rashid is a good bowler, okay? Moeen Ali is not even a sure shot in this team. I don't see who they're going to go to. And again, like, the way England play, it's a totally different kind of composition for a team. And I'm not saying that all teams need to be composed of like a few spinners, like how India are composed. But if you look at history, if you look at the way it works, it's genuinely a very key part of this team, which is lacking for me. So England's bowling overall is a weakness. Mark Wood is in good form. So like maybe like, you know, if he takes enough wickets up front, it could, you know, paper over the cracks per se, but I think that these factors are what keep England back from me saying that they are the number one favorites of this tournament, because they are definitely the top three, but I wouldn't go as so far as to say they're number one.
No, I agree with you, and when I see especially the crux of that bowling attack with Sam Curran, Chris Wokes, Adil Rashid. From these three, what I do not see are wicket-taking aggressive bowlers. Maybe Chris Wokes if you're playing a test match.
Yeah.
Because he gets the ball to swing. But in a one day in the middle overs, I don't know how effective he's going to be. Sam Curran, we've seen he's not in the best bowling form. Even in the IPL, he really wasn't hitting the mark. And they tried him in different things. They tried him as a death bowler. They tried him in the middle. They tried him up front with the new ball. And he just didn't seem to get it right. And the only saving grace of this England bowling attack for me, I think, is Mark Wood and the way they use him. I don't think you can get 9 games out of Mark Wood. They will have to at some point manage his workload. And for me, it is important as a captain how Butler is using him in which phase of the game. Like, do you give him 2 over spells in the middle to come in and pick up a wicket? Or then if a team is dominating, do you give him an extended 4 over spell? But then you're losing out on your key bowler. How do you use Mark Wood? Do you just get him up front 3 overs and then keep giving him 1-1 over spells or 2-2 over spells across the game when you need him and not use him in the death at all? There are many permutations that you can do with this one bowler. And I want to see what it is, because he's genuinely their wicket-taking option and I don't see anyone else who can fill that gap up for England.
Yeah. Wicket-taking's a concern for sure. Yep.
Yeah, and Adil Rashid hasn't hit that rhythm that you would expect a leggy to. But once he does, I think he gets the ball to turn and grip.
He's good. Yeah. I have no problem with Adil Rashid.
No, we've seen him like completely deceive Virat Kohli in one in a game in England where he got the ball to turn. And if he can get that kind of rhythm on Indian pitches, he's going to be a very, very difficult bowler to read because of his pace, and I think England need that to happen for them to go far in this tournament or to go on and eventually win it. But I will not keep too high hopes on Jofra Archer coming and immediately changing this England bowling lineup. It's a fairy tale story. It doesn't usually happen, especially for a fast bowler. They need some time to get into rhythm. Okay, let's move ahead. We'll talk about India since...
Key players, bro.
Key players for me is Mark Wood, as I said. Are you going to go the Ben Stokes route?
Come on, bro. That guy. Fuck, I'm such a fanboy, dude. I'm such a Ben Stokes.
He's a cheat code, bro.
Yeah, he's my cheat code player. You're not allowed to be the best batsman in the team and the best bowler in the team and the best fielder in the team, which he becomes. Like, there are games where he's like, you guys chill, I'll take it. And the games where he does that is like the final Ashes game, the World Cup finals, the World Cup semi-finals. So it's like, so he's too good. And if he comes back to this team and play, the thing is, his bowling, he can't bowl 10 overs anymore. He not even close. So that...
No, he won't bowl at all.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not... Yeah, he probably won't bowl at all. You're right. So that whole impact is... Fuck it, man. I'm a fanboy. I'm not going to say anything bad about him. I love him. He's my favorite non-Indian cricket player. So yeah, he's my guy to look out for.
He's the kind of guy who can... Like, when you say genuinely, like, match winner, like, he can pull any team out of any situation and one person is enough, like him, to win a match. There are very few players who are like that.
That clutch gene, bro. Like, you know how they how these Twitter lads call it, no? The clutch gene. Like, it's him, bro. It's him. He's too good, man. He's the definition of a big game player. I hope he comes back, like, even though I don't want England to win the World Cup, of course. I just love watching him play, so yeah.
Okay, nice. Let's move ahead. Let's talk about India.
Soon to be named Bharat.
Don't, man. I mean, the entire country talks about cricket, right? Wherever you go, on whatever street, there are always opinions on how this Indian cricket team should be played, who should be in it, who should bowl when, who should bat where. So, this is just two guys giving their opinions. I'm sure whoever...
They're very strong opinions.
Yeah, they are strong opinions because it's the same thing that we've been harping on. Indian composition looks good. I'm bullish about India in this World Cup. I think we are a fairly balanced side and more balanced than most of the other teams, if that makes sense. Our composition's good because we've got two very genuinely aggressive fast bowlers up top, which we've not seen for a long time in India, where the intensity is that strong, where...
Yeah. Genuine wicket takers.
Yeah, you're getting opening spells of that sort of aggression and speed. And then you have some very smart spinners in Ashwin and Jadeja. And then you have my Indian X-factor in Kuldeep, who is just on this team role of picking up wickets in the middle, which is so important, especially in tournament cricket. Getting wickets in the middle order is what teams generally struggle with, and Kuldeep just seems to have a knack of getting those. And that's the bowling department done and dusted, sorted. We didn't even mention Hardik Pandya, who comes in as a sixth bowler, who is again finding variations in his bowling. Vital. Yeah, crucial to this team. And then you have the batting. I think Shubman Gill is having the best calendar year that any batsman could ever possibly have. Far ahead in the runs. I think about 1,200 plus runs, and he's still not done. He's still got a few games to go. Hopefully, he comes back soon.
Bro, can I take over here to sufficiently hype Shubman Gill? Because I'm ready to go all in, bro.
Let's go for it.
So, like, okay, let's talk about our front top three, like, in the batting lineup, right? You have Rohit Sharma, the hitman, who is probably one of the best openers.
A flat track bully.
He is undoubtedly a flat track bully. There's no denying it. But God damn, the way he bullies, bro. My God. Oh my God. If he's on song, there's nobody more dangerous than him in cricket. If you see him in flow, just run away. If the ball is not moving in the air...
You know why he's so dangerous? You know why I get scared of him? Because the man genuinely has no interest to run. He does not care about running.
The ball is running for him, bro. Like, why does he? He's like, yeah, there's that line around the ground. If I hit it across that, then I don't have to run, right? Fine, yeah, let's just do that. That's like, he's become the maximum six hitter in the game ever. He just broke Chris Gayle's record, right? So there's that. That's Rohit Sharma. At number three, we have the greatest batsman the game has ever produced in ODIs.
Yeah.
According to me, people will say Sachin, people say Ponting, whatever. For me, Virat Kohli.
For ODIs, yeah, I would agree it's Virat Kohli. Especially if you're chasing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're chasing, that cheat code clutch gene gets activated in Kohli. And if he crosses 30 in a chase, it's more or less done. Like, he will make sure, even if he's not there to finish it off, he will put the team in a situation where you're always with the run rate. You're never chasing 10 runs per over when Kohli's at the crease, right? He will always make it manageable for the other people coming after him, which is so important as a number three, because that is your job, right? And you go into a tournament and these two players who I've just mentioned are not even your best batsmen. It's Shubman Gill. That is the level we're talking about. Dude, this guy, I have not heard the sound of the bat being produced like this by anyone this consistently. He is, doesn't matter if he plays home, doesn't matter if he plays away, doesn't matter if he's playing against Australia, doesn't matter if he's playing against Afghanistan, does not matter if it's a horrible pitch, does not matter if it's a flat track, he is always timing the ball incredibly well.
Yeah.
And let's acknowledge some of the stats that this guy is going through. Like you said, like he has, what, some 1,300, 1,400 runs already this calendar year. He unfortunately has missed two games for the World Cup, might miss three also. We're not sure exactly where he is in stage with his recovery right now.
He's back. But he's in Ahmedabad.
He's in Ahmedabad. Let's just leave it
there. Yeah, didn't you see that? Like the Indian Paps like followed him all the way from the airport to see how he's doing.
Of course,
and shit. I think he's gonna play.
I would do the same. I mean, if he does, it's incredible. I don't know. I think an ODI match is too much strain this quickly. But whatever, we'll leave that. But my point I was getting to is that there's a very high chance that he would end 2023 as the most runs a human being has ever got in a year. I think it's actually quite possible for him to get that. It's not even like a huge goal. Like if he bats at his average, he'll destroy that record with the number of games left.
Yeah.
Okay. And his average, dude, this guy has an average of over 65.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's played 20 games, bro. He's played enough cricket for that average to not be that high. And he's doing it as an opener. He's doing it with the strike rate of over 100. This guy is incredible. And
I think this calendar year, he's an average over 81, if I'm not wrong.
Bro, I mean,
or some like absolutely bizarre start like that, because he also has a 200 to his name in this year.
And he's done it within each and every series. It's not like it's one opposition where he scored like 800 runs and then rest of the, you know, games he's chilling. Everywhere he's gone, he's had like a, if you can call it a slight blip, it was against West Indies where he didn't score fucking 3,000 runs in that series. But for me, like, in, you had 2003 where Sachin was already big. I think 2003 is very late to say that. 99
yeah,
probably
14
is,
years
is,
into his career, bro.
I think 99 or 96 even is when Sachin became that guy for the Indian team. I think Kohli also had that moment, maybe not at the World Cup, but you could tell that he was the next thing for Indian cricket. And for me, this World Cup is Shubman Gill's tournament. I know I've spent a lot of time on him. I told you I'm going to hype him up because I see him as someone who can just break any record he wants, dude. I see this guy becoming one of the legends for India. And I think this is the tournament where he's going to announce himself in that fashion.
And you know, the calendar year that we spoke about is only international cricket. We didn't even address his IPL form where he had like three consecutive hundreds. And yeah. I think it was the qualifiers against Mumbai Indians where he's genuinely played one of the best ever innings I've seen a batsman play with.
He has not found
an edge at all. Like, if you ask Shubman Gill to play off the edge, I don't think he could do that because he was just middling that ball. What a talent. And so young, and the Indian team really misses him, I guess, because he brings so much to that batting order. Suddenly, we become one of the most potent, dangerous top three. And
no one comes close with those three fit and batting.
With those three, and you just need one of them to have a good game for you to set up like a match-winning total or to chase down. But yeah, we've addressed the three. I mean, there's not much to say about Virat Kohli apart from him being the greatest ODI player of all time. The stats say it, greatest chaser of all time. But I think just to that Australia game, right, when we were 2 for 3, we knew that the king is still there in the middle. So like all hope wasn't lost. And he did give a half chance away. That drop catch was lucky. But apart from that, it was clinical. is the word that I would use. He did not give anything to the Aussies after that. He knew when he had to play the spell out. Mitch Stark was bowling at a furious pace. He knew he had to play that spell out. The thing with him is that he knows exactly what to do in a chase. And that was shown when he targeted, I think, Cameron Green came in for an over. Kohli fended off, saw how he was bowling, and then the last two balls went for two fours consecutively.
Yeah.
That just dropped the scoreboard pressure completely.
Totally.
And then there was a word with KL Rahul that we'll look to attack Adam Zampa in his first over, and KL Rahul batted beautifully, hit three boundaries in that over, and just took the sting out of Zampa completely.
Shout out to KL Rahul, who's come in and really, after that injury, he's playing really well.
Yeah. So, Virat Kohli in the middle just knows what to do in a chase, and I think that's going to be so, so key when we go into the later stages of the tournament. Especially when we're chasing a big score in the semi-finals, you know, you want that kind of player to be there. But yeah, moving ahead, we have, as Akshat mentioned, KL Rahul, who's made an absolutely brilliant comeback. And this is a player who's taken it for the team, you know. This is what I like about him. The team needed a number four. He's changed his position, predominantly an opener. Agreed to keep wickets as well. So they don't have to put in an extra player just to keep wickets. That's why Rishabh Pant is such a big loss, I feel, to this World Cup side. With Rishabh Pant in this World Cup 11, I think we would by far be the strongest team, because then you have an X factor in that.
I think we still are.
Oh, you still are. Okay.
Yeah, I still think we are. But what you're saying is right. Like, that number five position is such a huge... I think when we're coming to weaknesses for the Indian team... it's the lower middle order batting, and I mean, we have a long tail, so the added onus is on that lower middle order. So number five position, we've experimented with Ishan Kishan, we've experimented with Shreyas Iyer, Surya Kumar Yadav. None of them have really made the position their own, and with a long tail, Hardik Pandya as well. So with a long tail, I think that is a very important and key position, right? Because you need your batsman to be that much better and that much more responsible. I don't want to get too much into, you know, bashing Shreyas Iyer. I don't really like him. I think he's very irresponsible as a player. But let's leave that aside.
Really? You don't want to go there? I thought you wanted to go there.
No. I mean, let's keep this positive.
I mean, no, we should talk about it, man. Because, you want to keep it positive. But yeah, I do agree with you. I don't think he reads the game situation as well, and that's just not acceptable for international cricket, right? You can't come out when you're 2-for-2 and try to loft on over covers. Like, what
Fuck
are you thinking?
Fuck me, dude. Fuck me. I got so pissed off, dude.
And in these kind of situations is when I want these players to come up and speak about what was going through their head. Like, did you want to counter-attack? What did you want to put pressure back on Stark? Like, what do you think? Because... actually, if you see Kohli's reaction as well, right? He's just staring at Shreyas Iyer like, what have you done, my dude? Why have you done this?
That one word, counterattack, has ruined cricket for me. Like, I'm shaking with anger, bro. Because counterattack, like, you don't get that every single match. Like, counterattack opportunities is not like every match. I'm like, oh, yes, let's go counter. Bro, it's a very nuanced... you know, choose your moment kind of a thing. You can't do it every single game. You can't do it when you're 2-for-2 chasing 200, bro. Like, why do you need to fucking counterattack? Take 30 overs also to score 100 runs. You can still chase the remaining whenever you want. What is the count? Okay, I told you that, bro. If you start me on Shreyas Iyer, you know, I'll go crazy. So, yeah. but moving on from Shreyas Iyer, I think even Hardik and Jadeja... Hardik is like... full trust, okay? Like, I know he's not batted a lot. I know he's not scored a lot of runs recently, but trust, okay? Like, my boy has shown up in every single ICC event which we've played. So, I'm blindly trusting him. Jadeja concerns me. He's really not looked great with the bat recently.
Then that question always comes in, like, are you playing Jadeja as a bowler? Like, is he good enough to come in as a bowler? Then does the batting really matter?
He's my cheat code for the Indian team, bro. Like, he's too good a bowler. Like, he's just...
To drop out, right?
Our bowling lineup is probably the best bowling lineup India has ever taken to a World Cup. right? Like, you've been through it. Yeah. I'm not going to go through it again. Bumrah, the number one bowler in the world, no matter which spell he's bowling, whether he's coming in the middle overs, at the death, up front, incredible. Siraj has grown so much as a player. It's amazing to watch. You spoke about everyone, so I'm not going to go through that. I don't think this team needs to be changed at all. I think Shardul Thakur is that maybe that one player who can be swapped in and out. And I think India has also realized that, okay, we can play Ashwin on a spinning track. What I want to see is us maybe try Shami instead of Shardul Thakur once in a while, just to see how that goes. Because you know how South Africa bring in Rabada as their first change? Imagine if we bring in Shami as our first change, bro. Like, how fucking awesome would that be? Like,
that's incredible, yeah.
You're giving the batsman nothing. Like, basically nothing, right? So that is one combination which I think we should try maybe against one of the weaker teams to see how it works. But, you know, it's a winning formula where the strongest team, let's not fuck around too much. Let's just fucking go and win this thing, bro. We have all the pieces in place.
Yeah. I know we spoke a lot about the strengths, but I do think this team has a glaring weakness. That is, we've, for some reason, not been able to chase down large totals. And I don't see this team chasing down a 300+. That is one thing that I'm scared of. And if it comes in the semi-finals, then it's very concerning. Because as we mentioned, our lower middle order just doesn't seem to have the responsibility. Kohli is a chase master. That is guaranteed. Kohli might have a big innings as well, but it doesn't guarantee us a win on that particular day. And I think that's where Jadeja's batting form is really concerning, because then essentially your tail has become five players, you know?
Yeah.
From five down, you're having your tail.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little strong to call it a tail with Jadeja. I mean, but he's not, you know, that...
It is. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the Jadeja of old, you know, like where you can... bank on him to take us home. I don't think he's shown that in the last year or so. I mean, he asked for CSK, so you never know.
Yeah, he just did this year in the IPL. And I think that's where India can take a bit of a chance and maybe move Jadeja up the order to try and accommodate Surya Kumar Yadav into this team. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there because I think this team lacks a finisher.
Yeah, it does. But again, like, I think we're so strong in other areas. Let's not fuck around with what we have, you know, just to accommodate all this. I mean, we're still the strongest team. Like, we're nitpicking here. So, yeah.
So, are India your favorites?
For sure. Bro, like, 2011 World Cup held in India, India won. 2015 World Cup held in Australia, New Zealand, Australia won. 2019 World Cup held in England, England won.
Yeah, but that's like, I mean,
it's happening again.
Okay, that can be broken. So
No. I think it's us, bro. I really do think it's us.
Now, I want the next World Cup to happen in Pakistan, so like they don't not only lose, they also break this tradition. Hey, let's talk about Pakistan. Saturday is this high octane India Pakistan clash that just seems to be the opening ceremony of the World Cup. It's like every other game till now has been a practice session. India, Pakistan. It's like all the teams, this entire tournament was made just to play this one game.
Yeah. The warm-up games were good, bro. It's starting this Saturday.
Yeah. What do you think of this Pakistani team?
Underwhelming, bro. Because see, like, to be honest, I started watching cricket again sometime last year to kind of get into the flow for this World Cup. And everyone was telling me, oh shit, look out for Pakistan. And I don't know, man. Like, their bowling is... So they're like a one-trick pony, right? Because their opening bowling is fucking incredible.
Yeah. They need wickets in the opening spell.
Exactly. So if they don't get wickets, it's done. Like, they are... The middle orders, they have no control. Like, none at all. It's really surprising for me.
No, forget control. They just lost. Like, it's like they've never been in a situation where they don't get wickets up front and then they genuinely do not know what to do.
I think it's also, I mean, speaks a lot for the captaincy because they're so passive, like, you know. And I saw a lot of this in the Asian Cup. They just allow teams and the batsmen to do what they want. They allow them to take singles when they need. They can take risk-free boundaries whenever they want. Like, there's, you know, there needs to be that intensity in the game, and Pakistan just loses that if they don't get wickets in the start. Okay, but I mean, let's not downplay how good their opening bowlers are. I keep forgetting that guy's name who got injured, bro.
Nawaz.
That opening bowler.
Nawaz.
What? Yeah, that is a huge loss. Whatever that guy's name, I keep forgetting, but that's a huge loss. Shaheen Afridi's form is a little bit concerning to me, but there's a lot of firepower in that opening bowling lineup. So I'm not. That is their strength. Their batting lineup also. Babar Azam is not in form. Fakhar Zaman is out of the team also. Like, that's how out of form he is. But they do have players who are, you know, playing well. I think that century which Rizwan scored was fantastic. Probably, you know, for me, the best innings of the World Cup so far. The way he paced it.
Oh, you
it
mean,
and...
wait, Naseem Shah, the player, the bowler who got injured.
Yeah, Naseem Shah. That's the guy I was talking about.
My bad, yeah. I think I said Nawaz, Naseem Shah. Yeah, big loss. Yeah.
So, I think they have a good team. I think their batting lineup is good. When Babar Azam comes back in form, it becomes a formidable batting lineup. But even without him, I think I see a lot of players playing responsibly in that team, which is important. They have good temperament. But yeah, I think their spinners and the lack of control or any impetus they have in the middle orders is probably... they're going to lose the big games because of that. And I in fact don't even see them making the semis.
A lot of people have said that. Yeah. In my opinion, I think they got very, very lucky that they played Netherlands and Sri Lanka as their two first games, which is two of the weaker sides of the tournament, because they're still tinkering with their batting lineup. Fakhar Zaman, they tried out, didn't work, got in Abdullah Shafiq, who scored 100. And they're like, okay, now our batting order is somewhat sorted. We know who is going to open for us. But if they were playing against the bigger side and Abdullah Shafiq didn't get that kind of innings under his belt, what are you going to do then? How many times are you going to experiment once the World Cup has already started? So I think that was a very crucial juncture for them, where now they're fixed with their top three, top four actually, with Mohammad Rizwan. And then they can start building on from there. But again, this is a team that completely lacks any conviction in the middle. Their spinners don't seem to find that kind of rhythm.
In their batting, I think there's like aggression there, which is good to see with this... what's this kid's name? Saud Shakil?
Yes.
Saud Sheikh. Saud Shakil and Iftikhar Ahmed... and then you have Mohammad Nawaz and Shadab Khan. So, like, their middle order is fairly decent. But I think not picking up wickets up front is a real concern for them. Like, what do they start doing after that?
Yeah.
And another thing I want to address about Pakistan is, of course, like, their fielding is bad. Okay, it's just been consistently bad for every Pakistan team that we see.
It's really bad.
It's getting a little better. They have one or two people who are good on the outfield, which is good to see. But man, they're so bad at taking reviews. Like, I've not seen a team this bad at taking a DRS. I don't know why that is. And like, you're playing professional international level cricket, dude. Like, you need to have some sort of balance and tactic and guile in the way you go about taking reviews. It's you just have two to use in a 50 over game. You can't lose both your reviews in the first 8 overs and get them wrong.
My prediction is
that one of these days it's going to come to bite them in the ass that fucking idiot of a keeper Mohammad Rizwan has taken a review which should not have been taken. And then they've lost out a wicket later on because they didn't have a review to take.
Bro, I mean, it's their keeper. Who's the keeper, bro? That fucker gets...
Rizwan, Mohammad Rizwan.
Rizwan, yeah. Everything. He just appeals, like, you know, his life depends on it. Like, if it's pitched outside, like, and hit him outside, like, he'll be like, oh, what's that? He's like, yes, this is out.
It's legit like that.
Yeah.
Dude, I have seen, the one Asia Cup game where the ball has not even pitched, okay? Like, it's not even hit the pitch. It's gone as a full toss. and it's gone way outside leg stump, and it they've taken a review for it, and it's the funniest ball tracking I've seen, because it's like literally just the ball going up, not coming down, not going anywhere close to the stump. And it's like three greens.
Oh man, that could be like the comic moment, the comic relief of this World Cup, Pakistan's fielding and reviewing.
But let's move ahead and talk about the last team of the Big Six, as we call it. Even there's a Big Six here also. Nice, just sudden realization. Which is New Zealand, who for me, I think they are my favorites. 2015 finalists,
bro.
2019, they lost in the most heartbreaking way a team can lose, bro. Like, that is the worst way you can possibly lose a World Cup final.
Yeah.
Forget, like just even a cricket match, but that's the World Cup final. And this New Zealand team I actually really like, because it's got this perfect mix of genuine game changers, great fast bowlers. You have Kane Williamson, who's a huge presence in ODI cricket, probably going to play his last World Cup, but we know what a classy, talented batsman he is. They have a good bunch of spinners. They have a good bunch of all-rounders. Devin Conway is probably one of the most consistent batsmen in the last 2 years or so that we've seen. So overall, I think they're a very balanced side. They did have some injury concerns with Saudi, but that's, I think he's in the fray to come back very soon.
Oh, is he?
So that improves. Yeah, I think so.
Bro, that's crazy.
I know one of their fast bowlers is coming back in a couple of weeks at least.
What's the scene with Williamson, bro?
Oh, he's back. They announced today that he's going to play the next game. I mean, he's going to play tomorrow.
Damn. Okay. I mean, with both of those players back, I mean, I do see why you could call them favorites. Because I think what you said, like, you know, their composition, like how India's composition is perfect for the conditions. I feel like New Zealand's is also extremely, you know, well suited. They have fast wicket taking, you know, bowlers up front.
Yeah,
which is, again, in India it's just so important, because if you don't take wickets up front, it's a long fucking day and you're looking at 350, right? So they have that. They have decent spinners, and again, spinners who are good at controlling the game. They're not, you know, with Santner and this new kid on the block who's Jadeja's twin, apparently. I don't know what the fuck, where this guy has come from, but a very good performance.
Ooh, Rachin Ravindra,
bro, what a name. It's like how I explained, right? Like how in 2011 we had Yusuf Pathan, we had Yuvraj Singh, we had Raina, maybe not, but Yusuf Pathan and Yuvraj, and how Sri Lanka, when they won in India, had these scores of all-rounders who could bowl spin, right? And I feel like having that in this team, someone who can bat, and he can bat anywhere in that batting lineup, dude. What the fuck? But having that option is very important. So I think New Zealand are looking extremely well balanced. And if what you're saying with Saudi and Williamson coming back, they look, you know, all boxes are ticked. I really do think they're a team with almost no significant weaknesses, bro. Like, it's amazing. And
yeah, they genuinely do not have weaknesses. I think the only weakness that you could say is if, you know, there's, they call it like happy problems or good problems to have.
Mm.
But now when two players are coming back, you need to, you can't not play Williamson, right?
Right.
So now
right.
Who are you going to drop? Are you going to drop Rachin Ravindra, who scored 100 and 50? Batting at number 3, or do you drop, say, Young at the top of the order and put Rachin Ravindra, accommodate him somewhere? So these kind of things could disrupt the balance of the team and the flow that they've gotten already, which is, momentum is difficult to get in a tournament, in a cup. Once you hit that momentum, you don't want to do too much to change it. But now you're getting in two players who are the team. So they have to try and find a way that they continue the start that they've gotten without disrupting the harmony and still accommodate the players that have performed well for them. I think that's the only problem that they'll have.
Yeah, I think, no, you're absolutely right, dude. Because that is, I think, the problem which they are faced with right now. With both. I think Williamson, it's even more difficult because all their batsmen look so good and so well settled. I think Saudi, he's just too good to like keep out. So I think maybe you can remove a Bolt or a Matt Henry for a Saudi. I don't know. Like, again, it's interesting, but at least I think with Saudi, there are some places where you can put him in. But yeah, I'm not saying, you know, like when you put Williamson in, you're removing quality from the team. You are increasing the quality, but it's just about finding that right fit and that right balance, which you don't want to be doing when the World Cup starts, right? You want to have that settled. This is my 11. These are these two, three players who I switch here and there depending on the conditions, right? But for them, they're trying to find an entirely new balance because it's a team which is working and now you're getting good players back into it. So who are you removing? So I think, yeah, that's a fairly valid point, but it's a good problem to have, like you said.
No, it's not. It's not because, Akshat, you always tend to fall into this trap. Now, supposing now Williamson and Saudi have come and you've made the changes, you've accommodated them, it's not working, you've lost the next game. And you're like, okay, we need to change something again. So again, you make a change and you get into this vicious cycle and this trap of continuously wanting to change things because of the opportunity cost of not playing someone who was performing well just a little while ago. So that's something that they need to completely stay away from. And I mean, New Zealand have gone far in a lot of tournaments. So they have that sort of game management and that game sense and tournament sense. I don't think it would affect them as much, but it still could. I mean, if it's Pakistan's team management or even India to an extent, I think it would be a huge problem. But since it's New Zealand, they should be fine. You know, funny trivia, like Rachin Ravindra was watching the last New Zealand-England final at Toit in Bangalore on like a screen. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe even I was there, bro. What the fuck? But they are an extremely strong team and they're always like this, bro. It's like before the tournament they don't get much press. They're like, yeah, they're a good team, they can go far. Dark horses is the term which everyone throws around with New Zealand.
No, you can't call them dark horses. Like a team that's been consistently reaching the finals, you can't say dark horses.
That's what I'm saying. So like then when the tournament starts, every time it's like, oh yeah, this team is going far. And they always end up going far. And this time though, it's like, bro, they are everyone's second favorite team. Everyone. I don't think there's a single person on the planet who will not back New Zealand if their team is not winning it, right? Because how much heartbreak can they take, dude? Like, fucking, it's okay, take it. Yeah.
I want to see, bro. Now it's become a human experiment more than anything. Like, how much pain can you go through?
But Amma, who's your star of this this person to watch out for in the New Zealand team?
I mean, there are so many. And that's the thing that I like about this New Zealand team is that everyone chips in when required. But for me, I think it has to be Devin Conway. I think he's going to have a huge impact on New Zealand's success. Not in the group stages. I think they're pretty much sorted. They're going to qualify. But I think in the big games, in the semis and the finals, if they reach it, I think Conway is a player to watch out for.
Yeah, I would agree. Now, that's who I was also thinking about. I think, he's destructive at the top. And in India, if you survive the opening, attack and you're going at a high run rate, you can hit massive centuries. We've seen that already in this World Cup. A lot of people are hitting centuries, right? And I think it kind of suits his game style a lot.
Yeah.
Because you have people who come in after, you know, say number two, number three, number four, who are very good at providing that supporting role, you know? Especially, I mean, fucking having a partnership with Williamson must be one of the most pleasurable experiences of your life, dude. Like, he's so good at doing that, you know, at enabling other people to play. And I feel like a lot of the New Zealand batting order is that. So, yeah, he's going to have a great World Cup for sure.
The way they played against England, like, they were so in control of that game, of that chase. England didn't look okay, there was like a dismissal. They were one down. But did you even see that wicket? It was a ball going down like that. It was an unfortunate glance that was caught behind, and that was it. That was the only chance that they got
from start, bro. Like while bowling as well, they just were on top of them from ball one, right? And if you are able to do that to your World Cup rival, god damn, bro, god damn. I mean, I know India did that to Australia too, but I feel like that win over England was even more impressive. It was just
It was very emphatic, because like Australia did have a sniff in that game when we were 2 for 3, but New Zealand were in total control. In fact, like in cruise control, they just took it away so easily. We'll move ahead and very quickly just go through the remaining four teams who Akshat and I have a collective view are not going to go very far in the tournament. No, like, disrespect to them, but we'll start off with Sri Lanka. I mean, the two injuries of Chamira and Hasaranga have affected them so much that there's such a big hole in that team that it doesn't even look like a team anymore. For some, like, if that makes sense. Two key players who are out, and their bowling is just like completely gone to the shits, right?
Yeah, I think you know, Sri Lankan cricket has had a very rough 7-8 years, and I think they have now this new crop of talent, and it's very early for them to expect them to perform at the biggest stage right now. So I think they're in that rebuilding phase. There are some really talented players in that team, but yeah, I mean, they're nowhere near the level which, you know, they need to be to be considered as a strong team for sure. But I mean, I think the future for Sri Lankan cricket looks a lot brighter now than it has done over the last, you know, decade.
Oh no, for sure. Their batting is actually pretty good, but they're not going to go far because of their bowling. I think Kushal Mendes is genuinely world class, and he is going to have a big impact for them this tournament. Then you have Asalanka, a couple others over there who can, you know, hit the ball long and play the big innings. But man, their bowling is just so bad. Like, I don't even want to start.
Yeah, it's...
How are you giving wide fours every over? Like, you're playing international cricket, for God's sake. How is it possible?
Yeah. But I mean, again, they're young, dude. Like, I think Pathirana is like, what, 20? And Belalage is amazing. Like, I think he's a great talent for the future.
Yeah. Teekshana as well.
Yeah, I think let's talk about them next World Cup and see where they are. You know, it's a good base. It's a good starting foundation for them.
Yeah. Bangladesh, again, a team that can cause a few upsets. The camaraderie within this team is good, and I really like what... where are you on the Tamim Iqbal, Shakib Al Hasan situation? Because Tamim Iqbal was one of their biggest players coming into this tournament.
So, I mean, if we're talking about just as a player, I would even put Shakib Al Hasan, I mean, in that cheat code category, bro. Like, he's too good a bowler and too good a batsman, and he's the leader of that team as well. So full respect to him, and I don't know, I think this is probably going to be his last World Cup. Legend of the game, absolute legend of the game. But in that whole situation, I think it's difficult to say, because as a captain, you're probably not going to get along with each and every single personality. And you almost hope that it's not with a very good player. Like, with India, it's like, okay, it's Sanju Samson. Fuck it. We don't need Sanju Samson. Right? But with this Bangladesh team, it's unfortunately with a very important player for them. It's difficult to... I mean, I don't want to pick sides over here. It's an unfortunate situation, but you do have to back the captain over here, right? And what he decides is the best.
Why I brought that up is because it was a decision that was taken on the collective, like with the team unity in mind and not an individual. Yeah. And I think that's what's very common across this Bangladeshi team, is that they're very tight as a group. They might not play the best cricket, but they're a team. You know what I mean? They will stand up for each other. They're good on the field. And... I think on spinning surfaces, like, it'll be interesting to see when they play in Chennai what happens. And I think tomorrow they are playing in Chennai against New Zealand.
Against New Zealand,
So this is a team that on conditions that are suited to them could cause a few upsets because they have two or three very good spinners in the middle. Yeah, I think yeah. Mehdi Hasan is one. And they have decent batting. I won't call it like outstanding batting, but definitely this, yeah, they spin bowling in the middle can definitely upset some team's rhythm.
Bangladesh always punch above their weight, you know, so it's good yeah. for them to be in this World Cup, and they are going to pick up one big win, you know, I'm sure of it. They will have one upset somewhere in this tournament.
Pakistan. Oh yeah, quickly moving ahead, Netherlands, the darlings of this World Cup for me, just the way they got into the World Cup, I mean, it's a team that almost screams that we don't care, we're just happy that we're here, kind of vibe, because they genuinely did not stand a chance, like, to beat West Indies and come into this World Cup was itself huge, and then we saw that incredible game of cricket where they chased down 373, went to the super over, Logan Van Beek comes, hits 25 runs, bowls the super over, gets two wickets. This is the most bizarre game of cricket that I've seen.
The best individual performance in cricket I have ever seen was in a fucking Netherlands versus West Indies World Cup qualifier, bro. Like, wow. I can't even believe I'm saying that. Yeah, if listeners don't know what we're talking about, please Google and try to find out what we're talking about. There's this guy called Logan Van Beek. Amar has summed up what he's done, but if you can find the highlights of that game, just see the scorecard. Like, you won't believe.
It's fun.
You will not believe what has happened. Yeah.
That was the day that, like, West Indies crashed out of this World Cup, which was a huge thing. So, it was because of that one man.
Yeah.
But yeah, not much to say. I mean, I'm not going to go into a deep dive into them. I don't even think they're going to get a win. But I'm just happy that they're there.
Sure, for sure.
Afghanistan, the last team, I don't know why they don't bring Rashid Khan in to bowl earlier. But do you think Afghanistan walk away with a win? Like, apart from maybe, say, Netherlands?
I don't think so,
dude. Do you think they have it in them to upset, say, like a Pakistan or an England or a team like that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, see, this Afghanistan team has done very well playing against associate nations. Like, they thrash those teams, basically, right? But they are not, I think they've till date won only one World Cup game total. They've been in three World Cups now. So, that team is, again, it's in that stage, like, it's obviously progressed more than Netherlands, and seeing how they've come up very recently, that's a great thing. But the gap between them and the regular, you know, test playing nations is just too big. They are dependent on a few star players. And the rest of that team, again, like, I mean, dude, they're not a very strong team. Like, I don't want to sit here and, you know, analyze what they're good at, what they're not good at. They're not a strong team. And they're here to gain experience, and I hope, you know, like, they continue improving so that by next World Cup or next to next World Cup, they are a competitive outfit. Like, you know, that'd be great to see. But not this time. Not this time. Maybe if Rashid has, like, a fucking 5-wicket haul day, and he's capable of that. But if he has one of those days, maybe.
Okay, then, really quickly, let's just do our quick predictions and wrap this episode up. Your top four, Akshat?
India, England, New Zealand, South Africa.
Yeah, that's my top four too. I don't think Australia and Pakistan qualify because of the start that Australia have gotten off to.
But
if there was a team that goes out, I think for me it would be England. In case either Australia or Pakistan come in, I think it would be instead of England. So I agree with that. Fourth or the fringe team for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I think South Africa are looking too good. So you're right. I agree with that. It's so much easier making predictions for the Cricket World Cup, bro. This is so much fun.
Since it's so easy, do you want to do it in terms of the standings as well? 1, 2, 3, 4?
No, okay, that I don't know. I will say that I think India and New Zealand are going to be top two. And I also think that they will meet in the finals. That's what I think. I'm confident India will make the finals. I'm not so confident New Zealand, like, semis, if you lose, you can never say, bro. It's one game, right? So I don't know. But but since I'm backing India to win the tournament, of course, I feel they're going to be there. And facing them is going to be either England or New Zealand. I don't think South Africa are reaching the finals. I think they're going to choke in the semis, bro.
Yeah, they're going to choke in the semis for sure.
Yeah.
But the good thing is that if India don't play Pakistan in the semifinals, then the match is going to be held in Bombay, which is, like, as we know, flat track. And we know who our flat track bully is, whose home ground it is, whose IPL home ground it is.
No, not just even Bumrah, bro. Like, Bumrah also knows what to do on that pitch. Fucking it'll be... Yeah, it's our trophy, bro. It's coming. It is home. Fuck it. We're already at home.
Okay, very, very positive end from Akshat. Where was all this on the chat, Akshat? Akshat has never been positive on our WhatsApp chat about the Indian team. Akshat just rants.
Because I get so... That's why I didn't want to talk about Iyer. And the rage, like, my hands are shaking because that Ishan Kishan, Iyer, Surya Kumar Yadav, the thing is that India had so many injuries, right, with KL Rahul not there, and that middle order had no one basically, and fucking Kohli and Rohit were rested almost every tournament. So seeing that, I used to get rage seeing all these players play. But now that everyone's back and everything's settled, I'm okay.
Okay, listeners, Akshat is okay.
Yeah.
if you ever want to see Akshat angry, reach out to me and I'll show you. I have, like, live proof of Akshat raging. I was surprised that you didn't go all out on this Indian team. I thought Rohit Sharma is in for a rollicking.
No, bro. I'm in like the blues stage of my life right now, bro. Let's fucking go. Let's win this. Yes.
Nice. Okay, listeners, I'm sure there'll be a lot of new listeners onto this because a lot of people might be following cricket but not have much interest in football. So thank you for getting to the end of this podcast. Do like and share. We are going to mostly be talking about football itself, but
yeah.
I mean, we're going to do these one-off cricket episodes here and there. So tune in again when we do the next one, or just start watching the better sport, I guess. There, we lost all our cricket followers.
It was going so well, bro. Fuck.
It had to come down.
Yeah, but they reached the end of the episode, so fuck you guys. We're football fans. Fuck all of you. Bye-bye.
Joke's on you.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.